Well, this is an unclassified briefing. We're out of military mode. We're continuing our series in 1 Corinthians with chapter 8, which is on the surface about eating meat that's been sacrificed to idols. It's a problem that concerns us every day. Let's read. I'm reading from the Message. Chapter 8, verse 1. The question keeps coming up regarding meat that's been offered to an idol. Should you attend meals where such meat is served or not? We sometimes tend to think we know all we need to know to answer these kinds of questions. But sometimes our humble hearts can help us more than our proud minds. We never really know enough until we recognize that God alone knows it all. Some people say, quite rightly, that idols have no actual existence, that there's nothing to them, that there is no God other than our one God, that no matter how many of these so-called gods are named and worshipped, they still don't add up to anything but a tall story. They say, and again quite rightly, that there is only one God, the Father, and that everything comes from Him, and that He wants us to live for Him. And they say, and also, they say there is only one Master, Jesus, the Messiah, and that everything is for His sake, including us. Yes, it's true. In strict logic, then, nothing happened to the meat that was offered up to an idol. It's just like any other meat. I know that, and you know that. But knowing isn't everything. If it becomes everything, some people end up as know-it-alls who treat others as know-nothings. Real knowledge isn't that insensitive. We need to be sensitive to the fact that we're not all the same level of understanding in this. Some of you have spent your entire lives eating idol meat and are sure that there's something bad in the meat that then becomes something bad inside of you. An imagination and a conscience shaped under those conditions isn't going to change overnight. But fortunately, God doesn't grade us on our diet. We're neither commended when we clean our plate nor reprimanded when we just can't stomach it. But God does care when you use your freedom carelessly in a way that leads a fellow believer still vulnerable to those old associations to be thrown off track. For instance, say you flaunt your freedom by going to a banquet thrown in honor of idols where the main course is meat sacrificed to idols. Isn't there great danger if someone still struggling over this issue, someone who looks up to you as knowledgeable and mature, sees you go into that banquet? The danger is that he will become terribly confused, maybe even to the point of getting mixed up himself in what his conscience tells him is wrong. Christ gave up his life for that person. Wouldn't you at least be willing to give up dinner for him? Because, as you say, it doesn't really make any difference. But it does make a difference if you hurt your friend terribly, risking his eternal ruin. When you hurt your friend, you hurt Christ. A free meal here and there isn't worth it at the cost of even one of these weak ones. So never go to these idol-tainted meals if there's any chance it will trip up one of your brothers or sisters. So the situation is, and we've looked at this before, that idol worship was prevalent in the city of Corinth. It was commonplace for people to bring animals to the local temple and have that animal sacrificed. But only part of the animal was burned. The rest of it, just as in our own Christian Judeo-Christian tradition, the rest of the animal was used for the priests and for the leaders. Well, there was a whole lot of idol worship and a whole lot of animal sacrifice going on. Way too much meat for the priests. So it wound up back in the Corinth Safeway. Safeway. In all likelihood, if you purchased a steak in Corinth, it had been sacrificed to an idol. And the church in Corinth was split between those who knew in their heads, logically, that idols were nothing but carved pieces of wood. And then the meat was fine to eat. It did no harm. And then there were others who were less mature Christians who had lived their entire lives in that system of idol worship, who believed that the idols were false gods, but that eating the meat still troubled their conscience. In their heart, eating that meat sacrificed to idols was sinning. This was yet another thing splitting the church. So Paul's advice was, even though you know the meat is fine to consume, that perhaps to save the conscience of the less mature believers, you should retain from eating meat. That is, that you should retain from eating meat so that you don't cause them to sin in their hearts. So there you have it. I encourage you, if you're shopping for meat down at the Safeway and you know it's been sacrificed to a false god, don't buy it. A fellow believer who recently was in the depths of pagan idol worship may be led astray and lose their faith. Worship team? I'm kidding. But you know, you look at chapter 8 and you go, we live in the 21st century in the United States of America. We don't have that. So what is this saying to us? Meat sacrificed to idols isn't really a problem. Maybe for missionaries. Perhaps for recent immigrants from nations where idol worship is still practiced. We wouldn't want them to stumble. We'd want to act in humility. But for us, average, everyday Christians, in average, everyday Christianity, what does chapter 8 have to teach us? Well, I see three things. And the first is that there's gray area. There's a lot of things that are black or white. Don't commit murder. Don't lie. Don't cheat. Don't steal. Love your neighbor as yourself. Those black and white things. But there's other things that are kind of gray. Eating meat sacrificed to idols. I know that idol's just a piece of wood, and I like steak. But my brother, you know, he's still struggling with idol worship. He knows in his head, but in his heart, he's just not sure if eating that might still be something bad. Secondly, we need to be careful not to cause others to stumble in those gray areas. So if you know something's kind of a gray area, it might be okay for me. I know. It's okay for me. I could have a glass of beer with dinner. On the other hand, one of your brothers who's struggling with alcoholism sees you doing that. You're one of the more mature Christians. You might think, oh, well, if he's drinking, I might as well do that too. And they go on a bender. They don't have the one beer. They have the 24-pack. You know, that could cause someone to stumble. And third, we must act with humility and love, not with brutal logic. If Paul were writing this today, he might have been addressing the issue of many things which were pointed out as sinful by this or that arm of the church, but that others didn't find sinful in any way. I mentioned a few: drinking beer or wine, smoking cigarettes, going to the movies, even owning a television. There's probably those who remember a time when good Christians wouldn't be caught dead in a movie theater, even if it was a Billy Graham movie. It wasn't just whether or not what the movie was showing, but the fact that movies were shown. Because movies were an idle use of your time. Idle as in sedentary, not false gods. Movies were an idle use of your time, and this should be avoided. In the same light, why would you own a television just to sit there and stare idly at it? Why would you read fiction? Harry Potter, Twilight, you name it. Not in content. Don't even worry about the content. It's fiction. Why would you read fiction? You read the Bible, yes. Maybe, you know, commentaries on the Bible, but fiction? Celebrating holidays. There are Christians who believe that any of those things are quite sinful. And I'm pretty sure most of the people I know don't consider any of those things sinful. They're gray areas. I know believers who think it's great to let off some steam. And as long as the movie is an acceptable picture, you know, not some NC-17 thing that no one should be watching, why not? The example I found in my research that hit home was a new pastor going and meeting members of his congregation. And he was being accompanied by another member of his congregation. They were going up to this lady's home. And just as they're on the porch, and he knocks, and he goes, and it's the other person goes, oh, I forgot to tell you. Don't mention bowling. And before the pastor could ask why or anything, she opened the door. So all through dinner, this pastor is making small talk. And in the back of his mind, why shouldn't I mention bowling? Why shouldn't I mention bowling? What's so wrong with bowling? Well, on the way home, he found out. He asked his friend from the car, what was so horrible about bowling? Well, this lady had been raised in a town where the one bowling alley was associated with the one pool hall, which was associated with the one tavern. And it's where all the disreputable types in town hung out. So to her, she equated bowling with bad. And there was no telling her otherwise. I wonder how she'd feel about the Church of God Bowling League. But if my bowling was to cause her to sin, wouldn't that be my fault as well? That's what Paul's saying. Isn't it better that I give up bowling? We're not winning this season anyway. Isn't it better that I give up bowling than cause a fellow believer to sin? Matthew 18:2, Jesus said this. Jesus called a little child to him and put the child among them. Then he said, I tell you the truth. Unless you turn from your sins and become like little children, you will never get into the kingdom of heaven. Anyone who becomes as humble as this little child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And anyone who welcomes this little child like this on my behalf is welcoming me. But if you cause one of these little ones who trusted me to fall into sin, it would be better for you to have a large millstone tied around your neck and be drowned in the depths of the sea. Now, Jesus here may have been talking about actual children. And I think he was. But I think he was also talking about childlike believers as well. Immature Christians. He calls us all his children. If eating meat sacrificed to idols causes you or another to sin, don't do it. If going to movies or smoking or drinking beer causes you or another to sin, don't do it. If you're doing these things, these gray areas, which are not specifically forbidden, causes one of my children to sin, then you have sinned as well. That's what Jesus is telling us. That's what Paul is drawing from when he wrote this letter to the Corinthians. Paul and the mature Christians in Corinth knew that there was no direct sin involved in eating meat sacrificed to idols. That was their head knowledge. That was the fact. But Paul also knew that this was a stumbling block for the children, the less mature Christians in the flock, who were still struggling. The mature Christians needed to temper their knowledge with love. As someone said, love without truth is hypocrisy, but truth without love is brutality. Do we let a fellow believer stumble and fall because of our rights? Or do our rights end where their faith begins? A Christian who acts wholly out of knowledge, without compassion, shows love towards themselves, but not necessarily others. Earlier in his letter in 1 Corinthians, Paul talked to the Corinthians about their dealings with the outside world. He reminded the Christians in Corinth, and he reminded us, that we are not qualified to judge the non-believers, but instead, we're to spread the good news. In light of today's passage, I want to revisit this idea because I feel it may actually have a little more relevance today than causing a weak believer to stumble. We Christians have knowledge of what is wrong and right. We also need to acknowledge that there are some gray areas, and that some may say what some may say is absolute sin. Others may say it's okay. We need to treat these fellow believers with grace and understanding. But what about our dealings with the world? What if our actions as believers caused somebody to believe that Christians were brutal or hateful? What if our actions caused somebody to never even consider turning to Jesus because of the example of his followers? You've probably seen the bumper sticker, "Dear God, please protect me from your followers." Do you think the person sporting that bumper sticker has a high opinion of our faith? And why is that? Is it because they're an evil sinner? Well, they probably haven't repented of their sins, but we're all sinners. This person has been turned off, caused to continue in his sin, because of the actions of Christians. The protesting Christian, the ballot measure Christian, the litigious Christian, the crooked business or political Christian, the lying Christian, the hurtful Christian, the judgmental Christian. There are many people who claim faith in Jesus Christ, but do very little to act like he did. The only time Jesus really got angry was when he was around religious people, or when he saw the church acting in a way contrary to its calling. When he saw everyday people, like the person who might have been driving that car, who might have been sinning, he acted with compassion and love. He acted with humility and grace. And I think that's how we're supposed to be acting, both towards new believers, weak believers, all believers, and to the world, with humility, our knowledge tempered with love. We may know that something is really sinful, but the other person thinks it may be fine. Why is it so important to hold on to this thing which is temporary, when that person's and your own soul is immortal? We may know that something is really sinful, but the other person who is not a believer, he doesn't know it. And instead of convicting him of their sin, which they don't even know is a sin, shouldn't we instead show love and compassion, just as Jesus did to a world of sinners? Love without truth, hypocrisy. But truth without love, brutality. Let's just try love. After all, Jesus died for them too.